You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. Heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
From hockey to wrestling, football to golf, no sport left unturned. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. Neil? The boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Good morning and welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live from Liberty Village in downtown Toronto. I'm your host, Walter Rigobon, and my co-host, Naz Marchese, is taking the All-Star break off. Couldn't make it in this morning. To all our listeners, if you're about to get on the road this morning, be careful. It is a pretty, pretty brutal drive out there this morning. There's a lot of ice underneath that snow cover. I had to use my considerable driving skills to navigate my way down here this morning. I had to see roads. I was diverted onto roads I didn't even know existed in this city. Just to give you a flavor, I had to pass by Dufferin and Davenport this morning, and intersection was blocked off. TTC bus did a 180 going down that hill and ended up, looked like taking out a hydro pole. So they're out there, the snow infantry's out there. They're going to try and clean this thing up, but as of right now, it is pretty dangerous out there, so please be careful. Wasn't a great drive. Anyways, I'm pleased to let everyone know in studio joining us this morning, friends of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, managed to navigate their way in, former Raptors coach Butch Carter and former Washington Capital Toronto Maple Leaf Lou Franceschetti. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Butch, good morning, sir. Happy New Year to everybody.
Good, Frank.
I think we wasted a show already.
We're looking at each other here like, okay, boys,
when do we get started?
we all got here a little bit late this morning, and we were ramping up the testosterone level just before the show started. So it's
starting with a
guys,
coffee.
Guys, you know what? Let's get right into it. I got to see if I can calm you two guys down and keep you under control for an hour. That's going to test all of my narrating management skills. And talking about management, there's two words that have crept into the professional sports vocabulary over the course of the last few weeks. Quotation marks, load management. I've been following sports for, I don't know, longer than I can remember my entire 62 years, quite frankly, if not most of it. And can't remember, quotation marks, load management becoming part of the sports vernacular. And that term is being thrown around with respect to the Raptors' Kawhi Leonard. I know you two guys have different impressions on Kawhi. Kawhi has been taking back-to-backs off. He's been, I think he took four in a row off, but correct me if I'm wrong. Of course, it seems to be an attempt to get Kawhi to the playoffs in tip-top shape. Butch, with all your analytical skills, first of all, has the term load management ever been used anywhere in sports, professional basketball before? And what's going on with Kawhi?
Well, I use a site called Sports Techie, and Sports Techie gives me the latest on what is being created in all sports on the technology side. Game prep, player development, in arena, and it's pretty kept me pretty much abreast on there is software units that you can wear that will actually tell the training staff what a player can withstand. And, you know, in my day, we used to run the short side of the Indiana University football stadium for preconditioning. And, you know, you could tell who was in shape by who finished first and who finished last. And the guys who finished last, when they got on the court, they were still last in suicide. So the load part tells them factually what's going on. But, you know, I stated on your show a while ago, it was my belief after looking at the videotape of Kawhi versus the Miami Heat in the NBA Championship Series that he had established himself it definitely by May of 2017, when they came back and defeated Houston, he set a record in game two for field goal percentage that only Michael Jordan had beat in 1991, shooting 81% in a game and winning that series. He was injured the first game of the next series in Golden State. But I told you prior on your show that Kawhi is injured. I believe that he has had a traumatic injury. I believe that, you know, that he's lame in either his hip or his leg. He is not as explosive. I think what he is doing is a miracle. I believe it's based off of he's come from a tough environment, a tough background. He's used basketball to excel and achieve. He has a chance to win no more than $150 million. If he gets the fifth year, it'll be $200 million plus. And I believe he's injured. I said that from the start. I believe that if he was playing here or anywhere else, it would be the same factor. He does not have the ability to play in all the games physically.
I want to come back to a point you made, but I want to get Lou involved at this point. It's a pretty heated discussion before the show. And, you know, as all our listeners are aware, Lou is an NHL hockey player, had a good career, played in the NHL for a long period of time, played with some stars. Lou, you played in a different era. You played in the 1980s. Players played injured. Because that was the culture of the sport. I guarantee it. They didn't have anything called load management in your day. And I'm not using that term in a pejorative way. And that's the way the press is using it. And it's managing your asset in the way that will maximize his ultimate productivity. But you've got a problem with that. And you tell me from your perspective, as a former professional athlete for a considerable amount of years, playing injured, you weren't a Gretzky or you weren't a Lemieux, and I'm not saying that to denigrate you because I've always respected the career that you did have. Give me your thoughts.
Well, the thing that bothers me nowadays, it's these professional athletes are treated with a silver spoon in their mouth. I understand the part of it where they're getting paid millions of dollars, and now I'm trying to get hold of what Butch is saying. But in our era, if there was load management, we would take a day off at practice. We wouldn't show up the morning of the game. It's not like we played any different than what basketball players did. I understand football players play once a week. Baseball players play every single day. So the load management that we would have is we would take a day off of practice. Don't even bother showing up, guys. And this is probably in February or March when the body really does get tired, just like the dog days of August. But what I don't understand with Kawhi, but now I do in a sense, is that how does a player take four games off? Like we're talking almost a week in any sport at all. Like hockey players, their body is as demanding as basketball players. Because it's a little bit more physical. And I'm talking only about the era that we played in, where it was a lot more physical than it is right now. But we still came to play. Injured or otherwise, we still came to play. Now, the other end of it is Kawhi might be taking time off, or any other basketball player or any professional athlete might be taking time off because he sees the fruit at the end of the tree there, a big contract.
Well, the thing I want to help you with is the one thing you have to remember is that Kawhi and these kids get these guaranteed contracts because of the pain that the Julius Irvings, the Bill Russells. I played in the 80s also. I took the shot in the knee when my knee swelled, you know, drained my knee so I could play. You know, I understand exactly, but I also understand that I have full health care coverage in the U.S. because these players pay for it. And any former player that played, and the benefits that they're receiving, the leverage that this new partnership that they have with the owners is entirely based off the backs of players like yourself and myself and players who were better than me and played a lot longer. Because every business needs to go from not so good to hopefully the good to the best. And maybe hockey is 10 years now behind basketball because you know, basketball right now has unbelievable revenues on digital revenues. China, you know, they've just done a really good job, and the revenues abound from where you used to own the team and rent the arena to now you own the whole sports complex. And so that's created a whole new partnership for the players and the basketball, the NBA players. You know, like my brother Chris says, how do they pay 12 guys $80 million and we've got 54 and we're getting $65 million? You know, so it's the leverage has changed based off the backs of the guys like you that played. And I think you have to remember that. And I don't account it being right for my day, but I count it being right for them. I think they deserve to have guaranteed contracts. Then now they don't have to hide when they're doing stupid stuff. You know, and there's no, you know, false vision of who the guy is on the ice and who he is off the ice. And Frank Ziccarelli wrote an article about the same thing, saying, you know, he should have played. And that's wrong, because guys paid a price. So these guys, if they're hurt, they do not have to play, and they can partner with the team to make a better decision.
Let me throw this out to to you two guys. This is sort of it's sort of a subset of a different issue, and I want to know how this particular load management issue with Kawhi melds into another issue that's always been an issue in professional sports, which is special treatment for your stars. Lou, you'll have to acknowledge, even in your day, and Butch, and even your day, and Kawhi's your franchise guy. He's the guy who's brought in to bring you to the promised land. I think we're naive if we don't think there's going to be special rules for him. There always has been special rules for the greats of the game. The Gretzky's, the Lemieux's, the LaFleur's. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but they wouldn't load management the 10th guy on the bench. They're not going to do that. They're going to do it with Kawhi because they think that there's a light at the end of the tunnel. Talk to me about how special rules for certain players on a team affects the team.
Well, obviously, there are special rules because I played with individuals that got those special rules back then. We're talking about the Rod Langleys, we're talking about the Scott Stevens, we're talking about the Kevin Hatchers and Larry Murphys and all of that. Is that we were, when the dog days came, and we knew that we had back-to-back games, certain guys would take days off. We wouldn't have to get up in the morning and show up for the optional skate. Us, as we call it, plumbers back then, we showed up no matter what because we loved the game. And I don't know even know if they gave us a day off, whether we probably show up anyways.
You're worried about your job.
Well, you're right. Okay. I'm worried about my job because here I am. I'm a third or fourth liner. I don't show up. I don't have a good game that night. Well, what the hell? You didn't come to the morning skate. Like, who do you think you are? You always have to look over your shoulder for a kid coming up in the minors or something that you do wrong. And that's the way I played most of my career. I always had to look over my shoulder. I had to look at who was drafted, what round, where were they coming in from, free agent that they were signing, knowing that who I was up against. And I couldn't show them that, well, I'm here for good, but I'm not going to take a day off to more or less. I played as hard as the other guys did. My body took as much abuse as those guys
did. How'd you feel? What'd you feel like when Langway got...
I didn't mind it because there was never a game off. There was always the skate off. If we played back-to-back, we had a couple of days off. Okay, Rod, stay home. Don't even bother coming to the rink. Rod would be there.
Let me tell you the difference. And this just popped into my mind, Butch, and then I want you to comment on it. You look back in the hockey context, and I personally don't have any problem with this with this Kawhi load management and whatever. Because it seems like the Raptors are a partner in those decisions. Not that they're encouraging him. I think they're supportive. I think the nights that Kawhi takes off, it seems to me that it's a partnership between the Raptors staff and Kawhi, and they're working together and managing a situation. It's not an adversarial situation, from what I can tell. And then you compare that to the Eric Lindros situation back in the 90s with the Philadelphia Flyers. And, you know, he's going to his own doctor. He doesn't want to play. And Bobby Clark's got a problem with that. And, you know, he probably went into games that he shouldn't have been playing in. And he probably took five years off his career because of this culture that, no, I got to get back out there. And, you know, just the distinction between how they manage Eric Lindros' career, and this is Kawhi, it's not concussion related, but, you know, the culture's different now.
Well, I just, like I said, I think until people understand that the guy sitting on the other side of the microphone at the end to my right, he's just as responsible for allowing Kawhi. The older guys who paid the price, they paid a personal price. They were in an unfair partnership, right? The most important thing I did every morning when I was in the league was read transactions to see who got waived. You know, who got cut, who was injured. It was for 6 years, you're looking at transactions. And I had a guaranteed deal at the end, but I'm still looking at transactions because as a rookie with the Lakers, you know, there's 15 guys, and you know 11 of them are staying. So you got the rest of the guys fighting for two spots. And, you know, it's – but this new partnership that's at least in basketball is – you know, I think it's directly related to all the guys who took shots, played when they weren't supposed to, and in the old league. And I think his question, you know, if he's gonna sit at home and say, you know, I don't like it, I understand the not liking that part, but I need to tell him the reason that these guys are going to have a better future is what we put up with. And a lot of times, as old fogies, forget that. But for me, it's real that. You know, I'm not ever scared of having to go to the hospital in Canada or the U.S. because they pay for my insurance. That's their, you know, and that's a nice thing to have.
I want to take you back. Go ahead, Luke, please.
Butch, I understand that part of it. It's not that I don't like it. I don't understand it. And to what you were saying, Wally, the owners ran the roost when I played. The players run the roost in every professional sport nowadays. Also, football players are the only negotiation parts where the owners won't give in on
guaranteed
contracts. Right. Where
if there isn't one issue that's worth striking for as long as it takes, I don't understand the NFL players.
Yeah,
your brother played
16 years.
Yeah,
16 years.
And unfortunately, he was a star.
Yeah, but again,
yeah. I explain to me why that isn't an axe worth falling on for the NFL players.
Because they have an unlimited supply of talent. American colleges' football programs provide them with an unlimited supply of talent.
Is it the problem that the stars are not? Is it the problem that Tom Brady's, the Drew Brees, Pat Mahomes, they won't strike their brothers?
The quarterbacks.
Is that the problem?
The quarterbacks historically would not strike because they know they're on the other side. The quarterbacks are the limited amount of people that are getting guaranteed deals. You know, Mahomes' deal is going to be $200, $240 million.
I looked at Casey Kasem. Was it Casey? Who's the quarterback from the Vikings that just signed?
Keenan, his name is. Yeah,
$85 million, all guaranteed.
Right.
Now I looked at Flacco could be looking for another team, and he's making $26 million. All these Bortles is making $21 million.
Yeah, they're in the 27 million dollars.
Yeah, we got onto this discussion, and it's an important one, and never really thought it through. I just think it's plain wrong. I think it's plain wrong that some players have guaranteed contracts because they have the ability to negotiate them, and most of them don't. It's just what do you got a union for? What do you got a players' association for?
Someone once told me when I was a very young man that the dumbest NFL owner is smarter than all the rest of the owners combined. In sports.
Interesting. Anyways, I want to follow up on one question about that you did an analysis on that site you were talking about. I want to follow up with that after the break. But before we go to break, Butch, you had your high school sweater retired.
Yeah, they finally.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Tell us a little bit about that ceremony.
It was just they have been wanting to retire my number, and there was a little problem in that I wore number 42 All right.
Jackie Robinson.
Jackie. I always wore number 42.
For Jackie Robinson or just for Butch Carter?
For Jackie Robinson, because I didn't really understand the issue with segregation until Martin Luther King died.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom was weeping, you know, uncontrollably in the kitchen. And then she explained to me. And so I basically spent a long time at the library reading every book I could about from George Washington Carver, Martin Luther King, but also all the explorers. And so for me, 42 was a number I wanted to wear. And it was agreement between me and my grandfather, right? He asked me, you know, I asked him about it. And he said, if you want to do it, but it may require a lot. And so I said I was going to do it. But my senior year, the assistant coach ordered number 43. We got new uniforms. The player of the year in Ohio as a junior, coming back as a senior, he didn't order my number 42, he ordered number 43 for me. And so I refused to allow them to retire my jersey until they retired 42. They finally, two athletic directors later, the young athletic director called me and said, will you do this? And then the kids that I coached, because I was a high school coach there for a period of time, they called me and said, you know, we want you to come back and do this to kick off. They're having a first-time Martin Luther King Classic, and they wanted me to be retiring my jersey as part of it. So my wife and son went down, and we went down, and it was a really nice ceremony. It was a nice thing to do. It was the right time to do it, but it was the 42 was important to me, and there was nothing I could do about it when I was 17 years old when they told me, you know, well, we didn't order that number. You got to wear number 43. And
awesome.
So. That's great.
High school? Name? Where? Cincinnati?
Middletown High School, Middletown, Ohio.
What made you go to Indiana?
There are a couple of reasons.
Did you wear 42 in Indiana?
No, Mike Woodson wore 42. I wore 43 at Indiana.
Okay.
Okay. So Scott May had worn 42 before we got there. I didn't want to wear Scott May's number. But real simple. Could have went more places in football than basketball. Went to Ohio State. Todd Bell, also, and I were in the same high school. We go on our visit to Ohio State. Woody Hayes says he didn't think I could play for him, which ticked me off. Then I figured out he was doing it strategically to tick me off. But they put us in the last row in the horseshoe on our visit. So I said no there. I want to go to a basketball school. Indiana was graduating four starters and one bench player. So there was plenty of time. And on that same trip, I took my youngest son. He'd never seen Assembly Hall. And I took him to the Indiana-Illinois game, 17,000 people. And Assembly Hall is a unique experience. If anyone's got a, you know, arena bucket list on I'd have to say you have to go to Kansas, Indiana, and Duke. Those would be the three most unique from how they're structured.
On that note, in the house today, Butch Carter, Lou Franceschetti. It's the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We'll be right back after the break.
It was a rainy day in Pizzaville when we received this letter. My marriage is in a rut. Can you help us spice things up? Yes. Get the gourmet special. Two medium gourmet pizzas for just $24.99. He loves Canadian bacon, so he'll order a deluxe. She can order the Italian because she loves the hot Italian sausage. Everyone's happy.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
There's an old saying. Entrepreneurship doesn't build character, it reveals character. Entrepreneurs learn to trust a person by trusting people. The law firm Rigabon Carly understands this. They know all about entrepreneurs because they work for them. Every day, they've earned their trust. They know that when it comes to meeting the legal and business needs of entrepreneurs, good enough is not enough. Rigabon Carly, the intelligent choice.
Steel's Paint in Woodbridge, an enormous 20,000 square foot superstore that carries nothing but the best. Superior staff, superior advice, superior selection, superior everything. When you have a really tough job to do, they can knock it down to size. They'll show you how to get it done right, and because they only sell the best of everything, you'll get it done to last. That means superior satisfaction. Steel's Paint, 4190 Steel's Avenue West in Woodbridge, the best.
This is Daryl Sittler for Alta Infinity and Vaughn. I've worked with some pretty great teams over the years, and the staff at Alta ranks among the very best. Expert sales, superior service, and the largest selection of Infinity cars and SUVs in Canada, and the most competitive pricing anywhere. It's no wonder that Alta has been an all-star performer for well over a decade. Visit AltaInfinityWoodbridge.com, or better yet, drop by the No. 7 Auto Mall at the corner of Martin Grove and Highway 7. Experience the difference that makes Alta Infinity the captain's choice.
Are they ever wrong about sports? I can answer that in two words. Impossible. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live from Liberty Village in downtown Toronto on the new AM 740, FM 96.7, and live video streaming www.zoomerradio.ca. In studio with me this morning, Butch Carter and Lou Franceschetti, and we were talking about Kawhi Leonard and load management. I want to get off this topic and move on, but before I do that, Butch, I want you to wrap it up for us in terms of the Kawhi situation. You're a former coach, 15, 18 years ago, a player comes to you and says, we got to manage the time off. You saw something in your research that makes you supportive of this decision. What are you seeing? What stats are you looking at? Explain all that to us, why this is a good decision.
Basically, if you go back prior to the 2016-17 season, the 15-16 season, Kawhi moved from out of nowhere to no worse than the second-best two-way player in the league. And looking at the film against him and LeBron, he ate LeBron's lunch. He was an elite athlete that played at 11 feet, 12 feet above the rim on fast breaks. He is not able to do that consistently now. When the season started, it was very rare that he would jump off one leg. In the top 15 games of the season they played at Phoenix, he had two breakaways, and they ran him down. He went off one leg, and he was not available to play the next game.
Kawhi's had the ball in his hands a few times, probably we're up to about four or five, with the game on the line. I don't think he's converted one of them yet.
Well,
why?
It's like I said, it's the toughest part of the team. First, you got a first-year head coach. And he's doing the same thing Casey did when Casey got here. Well, I'll just throw the ball to my best player, right? And, he's not doing any of the things you see Brad Stevens doing that, the ball plays best with the unit, all right? So the NBA and the winning team just said, share the ball. And then he's locked himself into, just throw the ball to him. He's not Superman. He's a basketball player. So Lowry's not involved in the play. Green's not involved in the play. None of those guys touched the ball. So it's ISO Joe. So what I really believe, it's a case of him believing in, I don't want to go in the locker room and people say, well, why didn't Kawhi get the ball? The issue is win the game, right? Win the daggone game. And he's not a former player. He doesn't have a feel for it from a former player side. So he needs to be better on the X's and O's. And right now, he's not very good on the X's and O's at the end of the game. It's not that they throw in the ball. They always throw in the ball on the right side of the floor, right?
Yep.
So, I don't scout him, but I watch enough that, he's always on the right side of the floor.
Well, if you're seeing it, I'm sure the other coaches are seeing it.
There's no question. The players are going to see it.
Yeah.
So the reality is that Kawhi is a very good player, a dominant player. He's especially dominant in the first and third quarter, which has helped them with having one of the best records in the East. I believe they are the best team in the East, except that they have to play Boston. But right now they're struggling. First-year coach, and, he's going the same route Casey went, throw the best guy the ball, and then he'll make me look good. At least if he doesn't make it, then they can't go. When I go in my presser, they say, why didn't so-and-so touch the ball?
What's funny about what you just said there, Butch, is that I remember watching Kawhi 3 years ago. I can't remember who they knocked off in the semifinals, and they went to the finals against Golden State. The night that Kawhi got hurt, they were up, I think, by 20 points.
That's correct.
And he got hurt.
That's right.
And it was almost like the balloon just, the air burst. Went out of the balloon.
Yeah.
I thought that night the way he played and the way San Antonio, they were going to knock off Golden State, and they were going to beat him. And it's just like everything just...
It's been a different world
since that injury. It's been a different... You're absolutely right. It has been a different world because Kawhi was as dominating as any... And we're talking LeBron and, and Michael Jordan or players like that.
Yeah, he was eating people alive. It's a gift that he had. Part of that gift is injured. I don't know the technicality of exactly what's going on with it. But, you know, when I look at, you know, and think of great athletes through space, when I watch video, that's what I'm looking at. How does it compare against the greatest athletes, right? Like, I don't get caught up in what Dick Vitale – if Dick Vitale's vouching for a player, don't take him. Because he's giving you the poison, right? Okay. Dick's been selling the juice for 45 years, and I'm not drinking.
He's made a lot of money on it.
You're not biting. Anyways, guys, since we're laughing, let's move on to another topic. Last Sunday, I thought was one of the more interesting Sunday afternoons in NFL history. Two overtime games in the AFC and NFC championships. I can't ever remember that happening. I doubt very much that it ever has. Overtime games in and of themselves in NFL playoffs are very rare, and we got two in the same afternoon. Both controversial in their own ways. We're in between the week off to the Super Bowl. It's going to be the Patriots and the Rams. Shapes up to be an interesting Super Bowl. Guys, the big story from last Sunday, the two big stories are obviously, I can't conceive of how the referees missed that call, but they did. And your thoughts on that? And what do you got to do to beat the Patriots? I mean, they're just... I mean, they're like a vampire. You gotta stick a knife in their bag.
I'll jump in on the Patriots.
Go ahead.
Kansas City scores with 2 minutes. It's stupid. Yeah. Right? They scored too early.
Right? Yeah, but that's not that easy to manage, Butch.
The way they scored with 2 minutes and 40 seconds
that's
left.
That's correct.
Right? Well, what do you do? Okay, we're just gonna, you know, you gotta score.
What's gonna happen is that New England's gotta let you score. To get the ball back.
Yeah, of course.
Right?
Yeah. Right? Let them score.
They're going to think about it, all right? Yeah. Remember going back to Indianapolis when the Giants, all right, they had to let them score. So you're sitting there with 2 minutes, like on the 4-yard line, all right, take it to the 2, take it to the 1.
I want you to respond to this, guys. You know, I bet against the Patriots, not physically bet in terms of real money, but. Just my prognostication. I bet against them 2 weeks in a row. I thought they were going to lose to the Chargers. I was pretty confident they were going to lose to the Patriots, just because I don't think their defense is that good.
Kansas City. Sorry
about that. Thanks for correcting me. Just don't think their defense is that good. Defense was awesome in the first half.
Yeah.
But if you're Andy Reid, okay. You know, he's not throwing the ball downfield. He's throwing to Edelman on these 3-yard passes. He's throwing to his back coming out. Every now and then he's going to find Gronkowski 10, you know. So it almost seems to me like the Patriots offense is limited. You're not getting any pressure on him. He wasn't even hurried. I know, I get the fact that they weren't calling any holding. But if you're Andy Reid, don't you just roll the dice a little bit and throw some blitzes at him? You let Brady sit back there, and you know he's going to pick you apart if you give him time. He's not throwing the ball 30 yards downfield. Did he just not coach a good game?
I just think it starts with this stat. Belichick is 17-1 against quarterbacks that are 25 years and younger. So if I
but
go,
Mahomes didn't blow that game.
But what I'm saying is. If I know that Belichick is good against young quarterbacks, then I have to do something on the defensive side to help my quarterback, right? Because the reality at the end of the day is Edelman has been doing this now for 7 seasons.
But Edelman's no Hall of Fame guy. Before him, it was Welker. Then it's Amendola. It's the same player.
I just
changed the initials in the name.
I totally agree. But at the end of the day, under the new rules help Brady more than any quarterback. All right? Tom never gets hit.
They didn't even hurry him in that game.
I mean, go ahead.
In my opinion, no one benefited more than the New England Patriots from the new quarterback rules. And I believe that if you don't rotate your defensive linemen, because it's always going to be important with New England now more than ever, they're not going to run off and beat the snot out of you unless you turn it over in special teams. The game's going to be close, and your defensive linemen have to be fresh so they can get to him in the fourth. And historically, those are the Super Bowls that they've lost, where the defensive linemen were rotated. They had eight defensive linemen. But I think it's, you know, Andy Reid, sometimes you can win the game. You have two possessions, one possession. I believe Andy blew it when he was down on the four-yard line and didn't tell his guys, we're going to run the clock and take our chances on one play to get in the end zone. All right, because Tom needed the time to get down the field. It would have forced Belichick to use up his timeouts. As far as I'm concerned, it was just horrible.
Time management. Well, you know, you're right. It's just one of those things that, one, Tom Brady has always been known to nickel and dime you to death. He doesn't got the stars, and that's why they always look for the big receiver, but they never draft him. Anybody coming off the waiver wire.
The only teams that have ever been successful, think of the teams that have been successful against the Patriots in the postseason. The Giants are the classic example.
Yeah.
The Broncos, when they played in Denver in that, how do they do it? They rough up Tom Brady.
Yeah.
They take shots at him after.
But
you got to hurry him. You got to get on him, and you got to beat him up.
But they also had a quarterback playing for the Broncos that was extremely motivated to beat Tom.
Yeah, and okay. He was almost as
that's
good.
Correct. That's correct.
If you want to beat the Patriots, I think you got to be physical.
Yeah,
with
but well, if you're nickel and diming him, if I'm nickel and diming, how are you going to get to me? Because these are all 5'7", 10 yards out and down.
I'm not an NFL coach. Obviously, I got to defer to the greater expertise of these guys. But
and also that's why they got.
I mean, it doesn't seem like rocket science. You got to figure out a way to get some pressure on this guy.
But stay with me, all right? Yeah. The biggest problem they had is New England manages time because they run the football. It's 90 plays to 34, all right? You can't squeeze any more points out of an offense than that, all right? So the issue at the end of the day is that Belichick went in and made a game plan and said, okay, we're going to force
them. It's the same game plan every game. I mean, come on.
But he hasn't run the football the last two games, all right?
He ran the football.
He ran the football, which only makes Brady more effective because they got to put one more guy in a box to get the ball stopped. But time management, when you look at all the things a coach is supposed to do, all right, he gave his Hall of Fame quarterback one shot to win the game, all right?
Coin toss.
That's it.
It's going to be
different. And if that isn't the craziest rule, why the NFL hasn't gotten around to changing the rule that says basically whoever wins the coin toss wins the game?
Well, they did change it.
Yes,
they did change it.
Okay.
They did change it. If you scored a field goal off.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay,
right?
Fair enough. But now, you know.
Right? So now they got to look at it a different way. But now they're going up against the LA Rams.
I don't see any rational reason why the Chiefs shouldn't. It should be the college rule. You know, if one team scores, the other team's guaranteed to get at least one possession. Each team has to have a possession.
So what are you going to put it at the 45-yard line?
Listen to
whatever you want.
Remember, it's professional sports,
okay.
All right? All they want is a winner and a loser, and they want it as soon as possible.
Don't you want a fair competition?
I think it should be a fair competition. If they want it fair... Yeah. Then it would have been pass interference in New Orleans.
Perfect segue into the
Texas A&M game this year, 74-72. Six different possessions.
That's right.
And on the second possession, you got to go for the 2-point conversion.
God bless them. I think that's a better. I think it's a better way of doing it. Anyways, okay. So let's finish our Patriots discussion. We got to go to break shortly. Then we want to pick up Baseball Hall of Fame for the last 5 minutes if we can. New Orleans, Rams. I don't even know what to start on this discussion other than that is probably the worst call or non-call in the history of professional football and perhaps in the history of professional sports. Convince me that I'm wrong.
There's no convincing here. It was blatant. I don't know what.
How do you miss that?
I don't know what
Butch,
he was looking at.
You're a coach, okay?
What do you do as a coach? Yeah.
Okay, you're a coach. I mean, I don't know if there's a basketball parallel to what happened on that call. But how many guys in striped shirts you have out on the field? Is there six of them?
There's seven of them.
Seven of them. Okay. And now I get the part that there's how many of them are legally entitled to make the call?
Six.
Okay. How? Explain to me. I know that we get the benefit of slow motion.
Yes.
I know we get the benefit of seeing it from five different camera angles. Mm-hmm. But you're on the sidelines. You see that. How can seven officials miss that call? What did I see? What did we see that they didn't see?
But the way you set it up, it doesn't work that way. When you're a coach, you actually believe that the officials will do most of their job at a critical time. Like in the NBA, you don't expect them to do their job for secondary players, all right? And in the game, they're not calling anything, all right? It's rob or be robbed, all right? They're going to suck on their whistle unless someone is mugged. And they'd have to be mugged being a playoff team. But they're not calling anything. So the problem with it is that Sean Payton's not expecting not to get a call. He's shocked. Like, what just happened? Right? And the bigger,
what did happen?
So I'm sitting there laughing because I love Canadian football.
Yeah.
And we have a correct – football, we have a chance to correct that error.
Yep.
Right? He's sitting there, man. He got nothing else he can throw, nothing else he can say. He can get thrown out and really hurt his team.
Explain to me what happened.
This is what happened.
The refs must have seen it, and they just in the context of the game situation, they didn't have the stones to call it.
No, this is what happened. Payton calls a brilliant play, fools the Rams defensive linebacker, who has to run all the way across the field. The kid, when he takes three steps, he knows he can't catch up to the guy and a ball's going to him. He decides he's taking the guy out so he doesn't get a touchdown. Yep. All right? Yep. Live for another day.
Yep. Hits him in the head
at the same time. It's a blow to the head, too.
But what's going on is you have an official who's running. And officials miss calls because they're in stride and don't get their head turned and see the complete play. All right? So if he's standing, say, at...
That explains one. And the other guys didn't have the nerve to overrule the guy that was close by?
Clearly.
Is that what happened?
Clearly.
Wow.
Yeah. There's nothing good about it. When you have 600,000 NFL fans sign a petition that they should play it over...
Well,
right?
You can't play it over.
I understand that.
I mean, you got lawyers filing lawsuits and all kinds. I mean, at the end of the day, it's sports. You got to live with it, whether you like it or not.
You have to live with it because there's no current
There's no
rule.
Other alternative.
Yeah, but in Canada, it's easy, you know?
Well, the alternative is a new rule, but that's not going to help the New Orleans Saints.
I had a nephew, Ken Stafford, win a Grey Cup with Edmonton because he yelled at his coach to throw the damn flag for a receiver, all right, in the Grey Cup, all right? It probably cost him a bad relationship with his head coach.
But it won him a championship.
It won the championship. He threw the flag. Ken's y'all name so long, he throws the flag. He wins. It was pass interference. They score and win the Grey Cup.
Anyways, to wrap this discussion up before we go to break, I'm not going to have you guys here probably next Sunday. So give me your predictions for the Rams and the Patriots.
The Rams.
Why?
I think the Rams defense is going to cut down Brady as much as I know you don't bet against Brady. But I'll also put another prediction in. Make sure New England doesn't get the last chance of drive. Keep him away. I like the Rams.
What's the current line?
I don't know what the line is. Normally it's three or, you know.
Three Patriots or Rams?
Patriots.
Normally
Patriots.
Doesn't get wow. away from them. I think the Rams are a very good football team. I think they win by 10 points. I just think they're different. I think they survived New Orleans. I think New Orleans was a tough matchup for them that has shown all year. But most of the teams who have to play them really have a tough time. And the fact that they were able to pick up this backup running back from New England when New England let him go, he's done an outstanding job. I just think that it's the Rams' year. And I think they'll be motivated. People say they don't belong there. And I think they'll go in there with that chip on their shoulder into Atlanta and hopefully band together and beat New England.
Since I'm here next Sunday, I'll save my prediction till next Sunday. But I bet I predicted against the Patriots two games in a row, and I sort of agree with you guys. I see the Rams as a better team, a good defensive front four. Probably will get the requisite amount of pressure that you need to get on Brady to beat the Pats. But we'll analyze it fully next week.
Wally, just remember, Belichick's got 2 weeks to prepare for this offense.
We'll have that discussion. Anyways, we're going to go to break. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day in Pizzaville when I realised that, unlike pizza, you can enjoy Pizzaville's authentic Panzerotti with just one hand. Pizzaville and its entities, owned in whole or in part, have no interest in knowing what you do with your other hand while you're consuming one of our Panzerotti. Seriously. Get two authentic Italian Panzerotti with cheese and sauce for just $10.49. One for each hand.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
At Titanium Logistics, we believe that choosing the right shipping company comes down to two issues, price and cost. Most prices are competitive, will likely save you money too, but the cost of choosing the wrong company to service your cross-border freight to and from the U.S. and Mexico can be extraordinary. If it's not where it should be, when it should be, that bargain price, worthless. Titanium Logistics. On time, on budget. Call 905-266-3014. Ask for Blair Downey.
At 20,000 square feet, Steeles Paint in Woodbridge is Canada's largest independent paint store. Big deal, right? Big deal, yes. The best brands, the best staff, the best advice, the best of everything. From color matching to brand selection, whether you're a pro or a DIYer, we'll look after you from the minute you walk in to the minute you walk in a second time as a completely satisfied customer. Big store, big deal, bigger satisfaction. Simple. Steeles Paint, 4190 Steeles Avenue West in Woodbridge.
This is Daryl Sittler for Alta Infinity and Vaughn. I've worked with some pretty great teams over the years, and the staff at Alta ranks among the very best. Expert sales, superior service, and the largest selection of Infinity cars and SUVs in Canada, and the most competitive pricing anywhere. It's no wonder that Alta has been an all-star performer for well over a decade. Visit AltaInfinityWoodbridge.com, or better yet, drop by the No. 7 Auto Mall at the corner of Martin Grove and Highway 7. Experience the difference that makes Alta Infinity the captain's choice.
The Naz and Wally Sports Hour is a paid program. Opinions expressed on the show are those of Naz and Wally and their guests.
They never argue sports. They just explain while they're always correct. The boys are back. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live from Liberty Village in downtown Toronto. In studio with me this morning, Butch Carter and Lou Franceschetti. Gentlemen, we've got about 7 minutes left. Another big topic this week. I wouldn't say it's controversial, but raised a few eyebrows, let's put it that way. Roy Halladay went into the baseball, and congratulations to Roy Halladay and Mariano Rivera and Edgar Martinez and Mike Mussina. Did I miss anybody? I think I got them all. We have loved to see Larry Walker in there. We talked about it last Sunday, but he made a big run up. Hopefully next year he makes it. Two of the inductees have chosen not to wear an emblematic cap going into the Hall of Fame. In the Baseball Hall of Fame, normally the player will choose which team he is going to put on his cap. Of course, Rivera, Mariano's obviously going in as a New York Yankee. Edgar Martinez going in as a Seattle Mariner. Mike Mussina split his career between the Yankees and the Orioles and chosen not to wear that emblem. I think I was surprised that Roy Halladay, and I'm not going to be critical, his wife is entitled to do as she wishes. It's her wishes. Ultimately, the Hall of Fame does have a veto. They can impose, it's a rule that came in 2000, that they if they can disregard the player's wishes, and they did that in the case of Gary Carter, I believe, and in, also in the case of Andre Dawson, who did not want to go in as Montreal Expos, and the Baseball Hall of Fame required them to go in as. So ultimately, the Hall of Fame has the ultimate say. They're respecting Mr. Halliday's wife. I'm not going to quibble with that. It's a very difficult time for the family. They're still grieving. It's their wishes. Blue Jays fans, I think, were probably a little bit surprised. In my mind, Roy Halladay was a Blue Jay. I would have liked to have seen him go into the hall with a Blue Jays cap, fully being cognizant and respecting the wishes of his wife. Gentlemen, your thoughts on that?
Stop being so soft.
Well,
Walter,
I'm a nice guy, Butch.
Roy Halladay is a Blue Jay, and whatever has gone wrong, that's not happening, needs to get fixed.
Interesting part, and the reports. Obviously, I rely upon what I read online and what I read in the press. Roy Halladay was quoted in 2016, shortly before he passed, that if he was going to go into the Hall of Fame, he was going to go in as a Toronto Blue Jay. He also retired a Toronto Blue Jay. They went through that ceremony of signing that one-day contract.
Yep.
I've got to think that Roy Halladay would not have gone on the record as saying that, or would not have signed a one-day contract with the Toronto Blue Jays unless, I got to think, and I don't want to get into judging how his wife feels about it, but the impression I got is that Roy Halladay wanted to go in as a Toronto Blue Jay. What happened, Butch?
Well, I mean, things happen, but at the end of the day, this is a consistent problem. This is my opinion. All right, consistent problem where you have the American families come to Canada. They don't adjust, don't like Canada. I hope that had nothing to do with this choice on.
Why don't they like Canada, Butch? You went through the process. You're an American. I don't know. You know, I'm not going
to
get into.
Do I need to tell you about vanity and with Donald Trump as our president? Americans are very vain.
Not all of them. Come on.
Not all of them. But Americans, rich Americans, are very vain.
Okay.
And
that's an incredible generalization. But follow through with your argument.
All right. Now you're being a lawyer.
I just try to be fair, Butch. But I respect your opinion. So let me hear your argument.
You get people who come from a tough environment, minor leagues, all the risk that goes with being, you know, an NHL player, an NBA player, a Major League Baseball player, and all of a sudden they're going to make it. They get a guaranteed contract. They can spend some money, and now you're in a foreign country. The money's different. The food's different.
Is it really that different?
The money's definitely different.
Well, forget about the money. Is Canada really that? Did you feel a cultural shock when you came to Canada? Like,
no.
When I go to the States, you know, maybe I don't hang around Alabama or Mississippi or Louisiana, but, you know, most of the places I go into the States, I don't feel like I'm in a really strange country unless I see somebody wearing a gun as they're walking in a shopping mall. That's the only time I feel like I'm in a strange country.
But
unless it's conceal and carry, you know, I mean.
My personal opinion is that the family struggle. And let me give you an example. How many Americans have stayed that played for the Raptors?
Very few.
How many Americans have stayed that played for the Blue Jays?
Very few.
Right? I mean,
nobody.
You stayed.
I'm the only one.
Why'd you stay? Let me ask you. Are you you raised a family here.
Yeah, but for me, it's a place of peace. I don't have to go and walk in the store, and I don't want to be the former NBA player, the former NBA coach.
Well, right? Let me ask you a really blunt question, and this is one thing I've never understood. And I accept everything you're saying, Butch. Did you find, as a black athlete and a black coach, do you find less racism in Toronto or Canada than you find in the United States?
So, one of the days I grew up as a young person was the day my mother was crying about Martin Luther King. I'll be quick with this. And so you go through that and you
sorry, I just 1 minute.
Okay,
Butch.
All right. You go through that. At the end of the day, when I came to Toronto, security at the hotel came to my room. So there's, what's the commotion? I was jumping up and down on the bed. What was I jumping up? I finally realized I'd been lied to my whole life that white and black people could get along, people of different colors and nationalities and backgrounds. And that's why Canada's home for me.
And why do other American black athletes see it that way?
Because I was making a decision for myself. I wasn't making a decision where, someone else was influencing me. I wasn't married at the time. And I had custody of my boys, so, I knew they were going back to be educated in the States. But for me, Canada's just been a good fit.
On that incredibly positive note, unfortunately, Lou, I've got to wrap it up. I'd love to turn it over to you, but I'm getting the cut signal from the producer, so if I don't shut up real fast, he's going to cut me off. Anyways, Butch, Lou, thanks for joining me. Naz, we'll see you next Sunday. And to all our listeners, have a safe and healthy week. The roads are bad. Be careful out there.